today, but really not. There are many, many people who are standing with me in spirit, and they have worked very hard to bring this collaborative into being and to have it produced as it has. Today, I'm going to talk about who we are. I'm going to establish some context for who I am and what I represent, the background for the problem that we're going to talk about, the issues as we constructed them in community, the approach we took, what we learned, and next steps, and try to do that in the time allotted. So St. Luke's was established, the charity, St. Luke's Episcopal Health Charities, was established 10 years ago. It was a wonderful, innovative idea of the St. Luke's Episcopal Health System and the diocese, the Episcopal Diocese of Texas, which covers 57 counties in Texas. And if you know Texas, that's a large piece of real estate. We are have been formed in order to address the health of underserved communities upstream from the hospital. That is, deal with prevention, deal with the issues of disparity, and do it in a way that takes into account the wishes and the knowledge of local people. So we take our values very, very seriously. We practice them, I would say, in a way that I have never practiced values before I came to the charity. We believe in advancing community health, body, mind, and spirit, and our grant making, which is what we are, we're a grant maker, is very much in line with that value. We approach whole person wellness and work through collaboration with the whole community and by providing informed action and empowerment. Our grants go to 57 counties in Texas, but because Harris County, where Houston is located, is the largest and the most populous, most of our grants go there. A little bit of background. When we go into a neighborhood, now there is the grant-making organization, and alongside with it is a research arm, which is my task. The research arm goes into neighborhoods to identify the needs of neighborhoods, and that informs the grant-making. So it's an iterative process. When we're invited into a community by a community-based organization, usually, or some other, perhaps an individual who knows our work has asked us to come in, we do a very intensive profile. I did the research in the Gulfton community. How many of you are from Texas? And how many, any from Houston? I know there are several. Oh, well, three. Great. So Gulfton area is an inner city community. It is just outside the close 610 loop of the city, but it is a very unusual community in that it has a large stock of inexpensive housing that was built rapidly in the 70s when Houston went through its incredible boom and was within 10 years left generally empty because of Houston's bust. Remember that? The economic bust due to the oil crisis. And so these empty apartments a huge influx of people from Central America that filled those apartments. And though those apartments were built for individuals, wealthy or middle class, happy-go-lucky single people, they were now occupied by by families and all kinds of groups of individuals that came to work in Houston. So it's an unusual community. In addition to that, many of the refugees from around the world were settled in this community by the refugee settlement organizations, such as the YMCA International, the Catholic Charities, and the Alliance for Multicultural Community Services. So a mixed community, it boasts, I suppose I shouldn't say that, the state's highest uninsured population. It is Houston's most dense community. So in 3.5 square miles, there are many thousands of people, probably around 70. So in the process of identifying the needs of the community, a profile of the community indicated that the birth to mothers without high school diploma in this particular area was 63%, which was considerably higher than Houston, almost double. The adults with ninth grade education were 37%, which was really quite a lot more than Houston. And Houston's, the majority of students in the public schools were below poverty level. So really a population in need. When we looked at the high school, the single high school that was the feeder for this entire neighborhood, we saw that there were nearly 2,000 students there, truly an international community. People came from 71 countries into that school. There were at least 40 languages spoken, and the principal is fond of saying that most of us cannot even name 40 languages, but they have to deal with 40 languages among high school students. So in addition to being an inner city high school with all that entails, it has that burden of being largely Hispanic, because most of the people come from Central America and Mexico, some from South America, but also from Africa, Bosnia, Russia, former Russia, and so forth. I mean, former Soviet Union, rather. Again, a large percentage of the students are poor, and the incredible one-third of the student population is mobile. That is, that in any given year, we may start a program with a group of students and one-third of them are gone by the end of the year. It poses incredible challenges. So how do we construct the problem? Well, first we were invited by the school administration, because I was working in the community and had an opportunity to visit there. The principal and assistant principal asked us to come in and see if there was anything we could do to help address the problem of pregnant and parenting teens. Because as this audience knows better than any, they are at high risk of dropping out. And on top of all the other issues that this high school faced, these teens were really in peril, and often when they left the school, there was no other place for them. They were really lost. So we came in, but we also came in with knowledge that this is a problem not unique to Lee High School, which is the name of the school there, because in the whole state of Texas, this is from 2005, the Houston Chronicle, we appear to be also topping the charts in teen pregnancy. And important to note that in Houston, Houston represents probably what's going to happen nationally, in that that the population of Houston is already one-third, one-third, one-third. One-third white, one-third black, one-third Latino. So we're looking possibly at the future in many cities. Now, that was in 2005. In 2007, the situation had not improved. In fact, if you follow Texas politics, then you know why it hadn't improved. Abstinence only is the word of the day in the legislature, and there's very little funding available for programs. So, NEKC reports dire condition of children in school who are giving birth, and what we witness on the ground is that these kids are getting younger and younger. Now, recently, in fact, less than a month ago, I attended a conference on dropouts that was organized by Children at Risk and the school systems, all of them around Houston. And they all acknowledge the fact that it's their burden to carry, even though it is a social problem, a societal problem, not just a school problem. So how do we approach it? Well, community needs to be involved in addressing the problem. Can't leave the school holding the bag. So our approach in Houston and with the charities is to use the community's input from the start up. We work through collaboratives that are either in existence in the community, or if they're not in existence, we'll put one together. In this case, we put one together. Now, I'm sure many of you know about community-based research or community-based participatory research, because it's not a new idea. It's been around for quite a while. But I just wanted to remind you that the collaborative approach really is the only way to make sense, to invite the community to get involved in the process. Israel and Schultz came up with 9 basic principles of community-based approach, and I don't intend for you to read them, but I would like to remind you that they're out there on the web, and it's a good idea to review them. But I think that the important thing about them is that we approach the community with a great deal of anticipation for them to take an equal role in the formation of a collaborative and addressing the problem and helping solve it as well. The way we practice CBPR is through a number of methods. We've used photo voice in some communities. In some communities, we do a writing program in which individuals then perform their writing pieces. And in this case, we used a very specialized focus group type of exercise with the students. The value of doing a CBPR with students is that we then identify the problem from the standpoint of the student. And one of the first things we did, we invited volunteers among the students. We had 88 male and female students from Lee High School who sat with us over half a day among facilitators who were trained and note takers, and they identified a number of issues that they thought had a great deal of primacy. First of all, they recognized that pregnancy was an important issue. Secondly, they thought that, this is the girls talking, that the guys wanted only sex. They felt that there was a tremendous peer pressure, and that interactive and active kind of exercise, but they identify these issues, dropouts, death, people trying to be something they're not, STIs, and on. Pregnancy and depression were also mentioned. We then took the pregnant and parenting girls only and sat with them and asked them to identify for us the issues that, as they saw them. But we also asked them to give us some idea of what would help them the most. And these are the things that they came up with. These are ways that they thought they would most benefit from getting help from the community in addressing these issues. Mostly, I'd like you to pay attention to the fact that they, right off the cuff, mentioned the involvement of dads in the programs. They wanted to be sure that they had an opportunity to talk to other mothers, that they had a way to understand medical concerns for themselves and for their kids, and they understood that the problem starts in middle school and not in high school. Also, they told us that they end up sitting in health classes that do not answer the real issues for them, which were emotional issues. They felt that somebody really needed to address the emotional issues that lead them to pregnancy rather than talk about health in general. Now, none of these girls felt that pregnancy was a mistake. They all owned their pregnancies. They were proud to be pregnant. For a variety of reasons, they wanted to be pregnant, a variety of reasons. But we had to approach the girls with that attitude in mind, that this was okay for them to do. And now that they were mothers, or were going to be mothers, what do we do next? The goal was to keep them in school. So, just a little schematic about the way we worked it. We had an initial meeting with the principal and the school. We then went into two separate activities that got the information from the kids themselves, one from the mother's perspective and the other from the school, the general school perspective. And then we put together a large workshop that brought the parenting and pregnant girls together with a group of resource providers in the community. There were many of them out there, and they were eager to help. And so we had this fabulous workshop, that half of which was presentations that people made, including the girls. They talked about what their issues were. And then half of the workshop was given to dialogue in small groups, so girls had an opportunity to meet with individual resource providers and find out more. It was very successful, but it was just the tip of the iceberg. It was not satisfying at all. And so the next phase was to invite the presenters in these in this resource workshop and ask them what else they could do. Now, the amazing thing was that all the people who were there were really touched by the process. And so they were very eager to do something that was more lasting, more institutional. And so the collaborative was born out of that group of presenters. And we started to meet in May of 2004. We're meeting monthly, and we're still meeting these days. Yeah, 5 minutes. So I'll go fast because the good stuff is still coming. So 30 years of information is in the books. You know, the literature has it, that the thing that works best for pregnant and parenting population is comprehensive programs. So the groups worked. What we did, all these adults came together. They split up naturally into three groups. One had to do with prevention and education. The other had to do with health and well-being. Friendship supports young men's program, and a doula came later. Now, I'm not going to go into this because you all know the consequences of teen pregnancy. They're pretty serious. I think there are three generations that are affected. The kids were pregnant, their mothers, and the babies that come to live under really difficult conditions. The collaborative produced this. The YMCA came in with infant and toddler program, which were not available in the neighborhood because they are the most expensive programs to run. The ratio of teacher to student is very high, and they're expensive. So that there are very few options for these girls. We had St. Luke's United Methodist Church came in with volunteers. They built furniture. They put up walls. They gave grants. They had a baby shower. It was phenomenal. The Young Fathers group was started eventually with a counselor, and Planned Parenthood came in and taught the teachers a program called Safer Choices, which was developed by the School of Public Health in Houston and accepted by the district. DePelchin is a children's program, provided social workers, and we have a doula that works with mentoring pregnancies. And of course, the Baylor Teen Clinic came in with a very large array of full medical services, including prenatal services and pregnancy and women's health issues. So I wished I could say that I have numbers to demonstrate our success, but in fact, the numbers are small. The road continues to be challenging. The success at this point is that there are more students who are staying in school. We've not been able to decrease the number of pregnancies, but we are able to keep the girls in school for graduation. 50% of the students throughout the school use the clinic, which is something that they didn't have before. So they have access to health care of all sorts. There are more and more programs that join the collaborative, and the teens themselves have formed a club called That Club, which is Teen Helping All Teens, and that is a peer education group that is very active and doing well. Now, in comparing a survey that I did in 2004 to the one that was done in the fall of 2007, we can't say very much because the numbers, again, are small. But I can demonstrate that the mothers are getting younger, and we are identifying more pregnancies, and we all consider that to be a good thing because that means the girls stay in school, they come to the clinic, they get their pregnancy identified, and they're followed. So we consider that positive. Almost done. But we are challenged by the fact that fewer have medical home, and more girls are identifying themselves as being in poor health, which is a great concern. I also want to mention that this year, 100% of the girls said that they plan to graduate, which was not the case in 2004. The challenges continue to be ahead of us. We need a prevention program that works for all the teachers, because teachers are very under a great deal of pressure, and we need to continue to build the trust of students. Evaluation is a big challenge for us because of the cost and the people involved, and funding to sustain the collaborative into the future. To make this all very possible, the most important ingredient is having a good principal who will participate in the program and this is where we are today. We have the programs around the kids. There are a full array of programs. They're all working well. We've built capacity in the collaborative, and that the collaborative enjoys a relationship, collegial relationship between collaborative members, and use each other to refer kids and to make sure that no kid, no child in this program is left unidentified or without adult support of some sort. The green areas in the periphery, which are hard to read on the screen, are new additions that have proliferated out of the school environment. They are now home visits that the school has taken over from the district that they're doing, making sure that mothers come back to the school. There's a arts program that is linked with the collaborative and are speaking the issues of the collaborative, the kids. There are small communities in the school which are there by design, and the school nurse is part of the program as well. So, again, these are the members of collaborative, and it's impossible to read, but there are Baylor, DePelchin, Healthy Family Initiative, HISD, of course, Lee High School itself and its administrators, the YMCA, Voices Breaking Boundaries, and the middle schools. The next challenge is, of course, the middle schools. Thank you very much. Any questions? Yeah. No, we didn't. Would have been a good idea. Possible to answer that because it's not a question we ask. Depending on who you talk to in that community, the number is 25% to 60% of the population of the community is undocumented. And so I imagine the school represents that variation. Virtually all the students are first generation immigrants, so first generation Americans. So I imagine most of them are, or if not, their parents are, and they were born. Yes, Baylor Teen Clinic provides care, comprehensive care for these kids. While they're pregnant, you know, they are qualified for Medicaid. Their kids, if they're born here, qualify for Medicaid. So that's taken care of. One of the things that the survey showed, unfortunately, is that pediatric care is often sought, but the girls themselves don't have care after birth, because once they lose their Medicaid, they're on their own again. So, did you have a question? A small percentage, but disturbingly, there were a few. We have some 16-year-olds who are in their second pregnancy. The survey also showed that while many of the girls, majority of the girls, live with their parents, at least one parent, many live with parent and boyfriend. So boyfriend, husband, that term is sort of intermixed. It's not clear, but they'll often call their boyfriend their husband. But, population Latina mostly? I think that may be the difference. The part of our issue here is that there seems to be an acceptance on the part of the parenting group to accept pregnant girls and take care of their babies. classroom space that was available, created walls, and we're licensed for 24 babies.